Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on freedomslips.com, Wednesday nights, 10 till midnight on Studio B. And I'd like to take some callers now, if anybody's really keen. I don't normally take callers. In fact, I've kind of gone off the idea, but, you know, bugger it. You know, it's about time to switch it up and give the listeners a little chance to contribute instead of me just endlessly ranting by myself. So the call-in number, for those of you with a phone line there, is 310-421-4053. That's 310-421-4053. Or you can call via Skype and Skype into the account Freedom Screen 2. That's one word, Freedom Screen 2. And I'd hope to enjoy your calls. It'd be really great. Other than that, I kind of like got onto this big kind of tangent about contributing to the fight against the New World Order. And so I thought it's kind of like a smart idea to actually allow people to call in and, you know, contribute, isn't it? Seems perfectly reasonable to me. Some of the topics have been kind of like buzzing around in my head lately is like feminism and vaccines. Like I talked about that last week, and it's quite funny because I was on these big, long Facebook. That's my name for Facebook. You know, it's kind of a cross between fascism and Facebook. It's actually pronounced in a German accent, Facebook. And it seems to me that what's happening a lot of the time is that we spend our time arguing with each other instead of actually coming up with a solution, instead of actually, you know, accomplishing anything. Now, there isn't anything necessarily wrong with discussing a topic and getting into the details of it with somebody, you know, like arguments and debating and talking about that. But the thing that I kind of find very frustrating is that we don't seem to be able to get along on the points that we agree. We only seem to talk about the things that we disagree about. You ever notice that? You'll say something really good and really profound, and a few people will go, yep, and they'll maybe like the comment or whatever, but they don't contribute anything to it. You know? Like they don't expand on it or go through to its logical conclusion or you know, that kind of thing. And it's the motivation behind people to get into things where there's some kind of a conflict scenario that I find very, very interesting. Because if you start bagging on feminism, in any way, shape, or form, all of these, hardcore Marxist, crazies seem to come out of the works and start coming at you. You know, and it doesn't seem like these women have anything feminine about them. It's actually like they've, should I say, it's kind of like trying to make women more feminine by making them more masculine. it doesn't make any sense. And the answer is because it's freaking insane. It's just a political movement. And when it comes to any kind of political movement, let's say voting was an interesting discussion we were having on the radio earlier, is it doesn't really have that kind of coercion with people, you know, that you're not getting forced to vote like they do in Australia. But incidentally, when they do get forced to vote like they do in Australia, you wind up with the same scumbaggery representation as everybody else. So what are your choices here, you know? And I was thinking that your power as a person is actually more greatly defined by what you do in those years in between elections, okay? If you want a particular candidate or whatever to represent you, they're not going to, okay? They're not there to represent you. They're there to lie to you and manipulate you into voting for them by hook or by crook, regardless of whether or not they're even telling the truth. In New Zealand, it's like a hyper version of that, because there's no legislation in place that makes it illegal to knowingly misrepresent your policy. Yeah, there's no legislation like that. In fact, activist Penny Bright has come up with a big list of the things that aren't illegal under parliamentary law. And it's just like, oh my God. Oh my goodness. Gracious me. It's that easy to destroy a country when people don't even care about it. You see what I'm saying? I find it like despicable. And there's a couple of reactions that people have to this. Number one is the most common reaction, apathy. They become like, okay, it can't accomplish anything. There's going to be scumbags under control the whole way round, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to stop it, and so I'm not going to bother. Okay, and now, I don't blame people who have that reaction, so long as they actually do something other than voting in order to make a better world. Not that voting makes a better world. Okay, it's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's kind of like a tool that we've been given by our masters in order to try and regulate them. And I say try and regulate them because most things that you try, you fail at. If you could actually regulate them, if you could actually show them direct consequences for manipulation of the population, that kind of thing, then you could actually achieve something. Currently, the legislative framework in all of our nations does not work that way, and it doesn't work that way for a very specific reason. It's because if it did, scumbags wouldn't be able to control you. Okay, and I think this is facilitated specifically through the media, so that basically, if you've got one scumbag candidate versus scumbag B, versus scumbag A, of course, and you're trying to make sure that they both or one of them gets into power, and you've got all these other candidates, what they call minor parties, etc., that don't get anywhere near as much media coverage or as much as the worship of the population, you'll find that they get virtually no media coverage, and as a result, they get virtually no exposure to the public, and as a result, they get no votes, you know? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? The more coverage you get, the more votes you accumulate. And there was one party in New Zealand here, a guy named Colin Craig, who's like a millionaire property developer or something like that, and he starts up a party in New Zealand called the Conservatives. And he gets, in New Zealand, you have to get 5% of the vote, minimum, in order to get represented in parliament whatsoever. Or you have to win an electorate seat. So there's like all these seats all around the entire country for urban areas, rural areas, etc. You know, it's regionalized. And so you can either win one of those or you can get a full 5% of the vote. Now, he got like 4.3, 4.5, something like that. Very, very close to the mark. But what does he get back for it? Nothing. Not a dang thing. And to me, even though I don't, you know, agree necessarily with the policies and what have you, I think if there's a percentage of people that support you and your ideas, regardless of whether or not they're making an informed decision or uninformed decision, you probably deserve some form of representation in the power structure. However, it doesn't really work that way because the power structure prevents it for that reason. Because you can't upset the apple cart. You can't rock the boat in this country or any other and wind up thinking that this is going to make you successful, it's going to help you, okay? If you deceive people, and this is the really sad realization that I've come to, that that's what you're about, helping people, etc., like Obama, for example, hopey, changey, believe some kind of Indian tribe, then people will vote for you en masse and they will cry when you get elected because of all that mantra, of all of that BS. And then after you don't deliver, the people who voted for you, who don't even follow politics, who don't even check to see if you've done what you said you were going to do, will actually continue to support you throughout that entire time. I'm not kidding. You have no idea how popular Obama was in New Zealand during that election campaign. And even still today, people love him. They love him. Oh, Mr. Obama. He's such a wonderful man. It makes me cry because it's just so good. Really, what did he do that was good? You got nothing, haven't you? No, I got nothing. Bro, you're a freaking idiot, okay? I mean, sweet mercy. You're just sitting there listening to these people talk about how great somebody is, and they can't name a single thing that they've done. Not like they can't know a good thing or a bad thing. It's that they don't know anything whatso-freaking-ever. There's just no knowledge there. This is why people still continue to vote and still continue to support their candidates that renege on their election promises after they vote, because they don't pay attention. They only pay attention to the mainstream media, and the mainstream media isn't going to call out and just say, by the way, our presidente, which I believe is some kind of pasta cooking methodology, is a complete scumbag, and he's financed by criminal filth. You know, it's just not going to happen. Now, we have a caller on here, I believe, just in time, incidentally. Welcome.
Mr. Vinny Eastwood, how are you doing, sir?
I'm somewhat fabulous, is my standard response. Thanks for asking.
I've just got to say I'm tickled to death that you chose to get a spot here on Revolution Radio, and I've enjoyed both your shows so far. You're getting thoughts and feelings that I guess I just can't say them in the same way you are, but I agree with everything you said tonight.
Yeah, well, just make sure you don't put me up on some kind of pedestal, bro, because that was my problem earlier on when I was listening to other talk radio show hosts, and then later on you find out that they're actually not all that they say they are, and I'm probably not either.
Oh, well, no, it seems like they've taken all these, let's give them a name like headliners, okay? We'll say Walter Cronkite was a headliner. He attracted people. They heard the name and they said, oh, he has something good to say, something important to say. And they've seemed to just dust the whole internet audience with these same headliners that are not always telling the truth. You know, whatever name you want to put out there, I don't want to accuse anybody of it. And it seems like the whole audience here on the internet has lost the definition of what a truther is. What is a truther? I mean, everybody's here so busy pointing their finger at everybody, and especially that group that, you know, doesn't sit in front of a PC 8 hours a day, but watches television 6 hours a day. Oh, they're a bunch of sheeple. And I got a new term I've told them before. For you guys out there, you're a bunch of goats. Because you know what? You know what's going on. You know how they're stabbing you in the back. You're convinced that everybody's bleeding. But all you do is come here and you argue about it some more. You debate about it some more. You beat these dead horses like, oh, whatever, JFK, 9/11, all that crap that you can't change, that nobody's going to be convicted of, that no one's going to go to prison for. But you come here daily and argue about the same things. How is that accomplishing anything?
Well, I also wanted to like bring up a couple of elements, like what is a truther? And if you take a look at the kind of textbook definition, you're talking about a 9/11 truther. And I think this has kind of evolved because 9/11 happened a while ago, and I think it still needs to be exposed even more because the majority of the population don't think it's an inside job yet or something of that nature. But a truth is somebody who is basically in it for the truth, right? Whatever the truth might be, that's what they're searching for. Truth seeker, blah, 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 whatever label you want to put on it. And I don't really label myself with anything, but I don't really mind being called a truther. Because that's been turned into a demonization term. They call us truthers, like with an F.
Oh, they're truthers. You know?
And the thing is about truthers is that a lot of us actually, when you wake up, you think that you're awake. All right. And I've realized that that's not the way at all. It's kind of like, what was that movie, The Ninth Gate or something like that. So you've got all these different gateways that you've got to go through before in order to get to hell or to heaven. It's kind of like that. It's like you've spent most of your life layered with psychoses and difficult things to get over that you don't fully understand as yet. And then we go out and we start thinking that we're awake and we start calling other people sheeple and so on and so forth. And I think that's really inherently disrespectful to call a member of the general public a sheeple, because it implies that you're awake and totally and you're great and they're not, which is why I call them slave scum. Because I think there's a lot more... Because I think it's a lot more appropriate, because I consider myself a slave. I mean, you know, I pay various amounts of tax on petrol and we've got a goods and services tax. So whenever you buy something anywhere here in New Zealand, you're automatically paying your tax. You haven't gotten out of it. So basically you're just a slave on the plantation, you know, and we all are. And I think the sooner we start to realize that we're not actually free and we're not actually awake, the sooner we'll actually be on the road to becoming truly awake, to becoming truly free. And we're not going to get there by picking on people who are nowhere near free and are nowhere near awake.
Thank you. Thank you. That's so true. And you know, the funny thing is, Vinny, we all have it in us. You know, we were born with it. We have this motivation, this enthusiasm, you know, if we want to put our hand on the stick and get it in gear. But we've been so, what's the word I want? You know, we've been so, we become so lazy. We become so lazy because they put a pretty word on it, convenient.
Yeah.
It's convenient to you.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was just thinking about that before the show as well, is like how attached we are to convenience and comfort. And if you're a truther and you currently experience a lot of convenience foods and things of that nature, and you're actually relatively comfortable in your life, it's basically going to limit your potential massively. If you're in immense amounts of pain, however, and you have this intense motivation because of that pain, then you're more likely to achieve something worth achieving. And like people in our day and age, they avoid trauma, they avoid change, okay, specifically in their own life. Even though they want change in the real world, they're not prepared to have it rest on their shoulders, you know? And I think we've got to change that. We actually kind of have to take a few knocks on the chin in the ring and realize that we're not playing a spectator sport anymore, that you've got to be in it to win it. And if you want to score the touchdown between the goalposts, you best get on the field. You can't watch from the sidelines. You can't throw popcorn at the people who aren't running fast enough. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
We're being distracted. Well, it's just we've become obsessed with distraction. I think I'm even guilty of this myself. You know, sometimes I'll be like, these last couple of weeks, for example, instead of going to bed early and then getting up refreshed and then busting my ass at work and things like that, I'll like stay up and watch a movie or something online. And then I'm just like thinking about it. And these last two nights in a row, I was about to watch a movie and then I go, no, I've got to go to bed. And it's the thing, it's like, what am I spending my time on? What am I actually achieving? Am I growing as a person because I watched another Hollywood movie up way past my bedtime and woke up feeling like crap? is that what I'm trying to achieve here? No, I don't think so. It's like, being able to self-analyze is a winch because it means you've got nobody to blame but yourself, you know? And everybody needs that kind of cushion of comfort, like it's somebody else's fault, it's the New World Order's thing that are doing it to me, it's the politicians, it's the corporations, it's blah, 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 blah. No, bro. No. It's you and you alone that are at fault here. I mean, not in a literal sense, but in your own life sense of the word. So if you're really sitting there and you're like, man, this TV is BS, it's disgusting, and blah, 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 and then you keep watching it. Oh, these politicians are terrible. And you keep voting for them. Oh, this petrol is absolutely awful. And then you keep getting jobs that you have to commute every single day so that you have to continuously buy copious quantities more of the petrol. You start talking about the health industry and how bad it is for people. And then you keep going and buying fast food that causes all the health concerns that the health industry doesn't tell you are actually a result of poor diet and stuff like that because they don't teach them any nutrition in medical school anymore. And you keep going to the doctor to get the pills to help sustain you out. With your alleged mental problems that they don't have a blood test to show you and it proves that that's the case, okay? You're going in blind, son. There's nothing going on here but what you have. If you're inadequate, if you're unwilling to research, if you're unwilling to challenge yourself, if you're unwilling to basically destroy your life in order to rebuild it in a better way, sometimes, basically, that's what it's like. We're living in an old house that is dusty and musty and moldy and is making us sick. And sometimes you have to bulldoze it and start afresh. And it's the only way you can really do it.
Oh, but that means I got to rebuild everything, Vinny.
Exactly. So you got that choice. You've either got to like suffer a huge amount in order to make yourself better or suffer a huge amount by being crap and continuing to suffer until you die.
There you go.
You know, make a decision. At least be conscious about it, bro.
I love it. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I wanted you to get at least one call.
All right. Thank you very much. And for those of you else who want to come on in and call up, the number is 310-421-4053. That's 310-421-4053, or you can Skype directly in to Freedom Screen 2. That's Freedom Screen 2 on Skype. And we very much appreciate your calls around this time. Now, this is only my second show on Revolution Radio, and you know, frankly, I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know where the network is going to go, whether or not it's going to get shut down tomorrow or anything. But you know, my reaction is: have I done it before? No, then do it anyway. Okay, because I haven't done it. I haven't done a one day a week radio show. I haven't done a show on Freedom Slips, and that's all the motivation I need to do something, you know, because I haven't done it yet. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about making a movie, a short film from a script that I wrote called The Caffeined. It's kind of, you know, somebody who's addicted to coffee is called a caffeined. I've just coined the term. What I envisaged for it is actually for this 15-minute script of these conversations with these people to be all done in one shot. No editing, just totally planned out and rehearsed like a play, and including rehearsing the camera moves and everything in order to be able to capture the entire thing without boringness, without cuts, and actually making a something that's really fantastic. And I asked my mate, hey, has it been done before like that? He's like, no, it hasn't. And I said, that's all the reason I need to do it then. And maybe I'm just a little bit weird, you know. I'm going to admit right here, I'm not your average guy. I'm very, very different. And this doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody else. This means I just have certain skills and whatnot. Now, I'm being called by Keith Roberts, or Keith AZ, if the producer could bring him on the show right now, that'd be nice. But I've got this other element here, and there's another caller and stuff. I'm getting all these calls all over the place. I don't know who's ringing me, but or why. But we'll see what we can do about that. Regardless, the point I was trying to make here is like if you haven't done something before, it's kind of like making your brain work again. Okay, so if you haven't learned something in a while, your brain gets used to not learning. If you haven't been motivated in a while, your brain gets used to being demotivated. And that's why you need to inject these new things, these new phenomena, these new thoughts, new radio shows, new YouTube videos and everything into your life in the hopes that you can actually change something for a change. Now, we're being joined now by Keith Roberts. Keith, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Vinny.
What's up,
man? I wanted to say I think you're doing an incredibly powerful show.
Well, thank you.
And welcome you to the network, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's good to be here and actually have a regular scheduled broadcast as well. The producer I've got here, Sean, appears to be top of his game. And I like dealing exclusively with people who are really good at what they do because it keeps me, you know, motivated and doing what I do. You know what I'm saying?
So this is your second show on the network?
Yeah, so far.
Oh, you should have told me. You were on just the other week, and you didn't tell me you were coming on.
My bad. I'm not good at the whole self-promotion. Actually, that's not true. I'm really good at self-promoting, because I think there's nothing shameful about shameless self-promotion, just in general.
No, I agree. I think what you're saying is, you know, this is the same thing we say about the network. If you want to continue to hear Revolution Radio with this commercial-free format, which is awesome, I think Mike Ringley has really hit the nail on the head with that. You know, you need a little or a lot. It's all good.
Well, I like the idea. I was actually thinking about this over the break, Keith. Funny you should mention this about donors, donations, and support behind networks and things of that nature. And what I concluded is that there's a couple of different ways to run a network, and every business has to make money somehow, just in order to keep itself afloat at the very minimum and be able to expand itself and grow its influence at the maximum, right? And there's two ways to do about this in the talk radio format. Number one, you can do the American commercialized model, which is ad breaks every 5 to 10 minutes. So you can never have a good conversation with recorded advertisements and things of that nature that just repeat themselves over and over and over and over and over and over again. Repeat itself and repeat itself, repeat itself. And that'll probably annoy the living crap out of a lot of people. And the second format is, and of course, some of those people who get annoyed will actually wind up buying the products, and hence the network survives. And the second option is you need to actually rely on listener contributions, because it's about the people that actually listen to you, consume your content, and try to get messages across to you that are indeed the ones that will finance you, who will be indeed the ones to actually keep you on your feet. And I learned this earlier on, becoming a truther myself, is that sometimes you can't charge people and you can't advertise to them. You actually have to do what needs to be done and simply ask for help when you need it. You know, and this is kind of my preferred way of doing things. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to donate to Freedom Slips, you can go to the homepage there at freedomslips.com. And if you want to donate to me specifically for my efforts down here in New Zealand, obviously there's no real borders nowadays, are there? You can go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate there as well. But other than that, Keith, I was wondering, how long have you actually had your roundtable going on Freedom Slips here?
Currently, I'm doing 3 shows. I started with just the one about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago. I started with Major Tom on Ground Control, and we had you on early on. And Vera, who's one of the general managers, says, "You got to get Vinny a show." And of course, I told you that. Vinny, join the network, and you finally have. So I'm so grateful for that.
Well, you know, not every host reflects all the opinions of all the other hosts, so that's good on it. And we've got another caller coming in here, Mona Radler, I think. Mona, you're on the air.
Oh, am I? Oh, goodness. What do you think of Cosmic Mechanics?
Cosmic Mechanics. I tried to get my car fixed there one, and they turned it into some kind of a fractal, and it really effed me off, frankly.
Oh my goodness.
Better question might be Cannabis.
Hmm?
Cannabis?
Cannabis. It's the Egyptian god of weed. They've got statues of him right next to Anubis, which is the older one.
Even if we're glucose intolerant?
Well, actually, do you know why cows can't wear flip-flops?
No, why?
Because they lack toes.
Oh, that was
allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. And tea bags on top of it, right?
Only if Barack Obama's involved in the sexy room at the White House. But other than that, no.
And he doesn't nail either.
If you say so. So, Mona, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I'm just another host welcoming a new host.
That's excellent. Now, I've always wondered, what's the difference between a host and a parasite? And in talk radio, often there isn't one.
Well, oh, yeah. My own cure. Okay, puff, puff, pass. Oh, my.
Well, and if it's strong enough, it's puff, puff, pass out. In fact, I was just thinking about, Now, drugs and drug consumption, this is actually something I've been thinking about just yesterday, in fact, is that a lot of people in this movement are drug dependent on some kind of substance, and I've been sort of trying to control mine, like I've just been like doing the Holy Trinity, you know, the occasional ciggy, the occasional coffee, and the occasional puff of a joint, and I thought to myself, you know what, how can I control this, how can I actually get this down? And I used to be drinking like about 4 or 5 coffees a day, give or take, depending on how much radio I've done. I'm now down to 1. And I used to be doing maybe 10, 15 cigarettes a day. Now I'm down to about 4. And I used to be getting high every day. And now I maybe get high a couple of times a week on the weekends as well. It's kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm approaching 30 and I thought to myself, you know, it might be about time to get control of my own freaking life and not use substances as a crutch to support my existence and my sanity. That said, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given by a professional talk show host was Jack Blood. And he says, 2 pieces of advice. Number 1, drink. If I didn't drink, I would have gone nuts a long time ago. Number 2, take the money. If somebody's offering you money, they're not telling you to change what you're doing or sell out in some way, just take the freaking money. Somebody's offering you $20 and you say, no, keep that for yourself, for your family. Just take the money. You need it. You've got rent. You've got food. You got to pay for and that kind of thing. And it's no evil thing when somebody voluntarily comes at you and asks to be able to support you. Why would you refuse that? Out of some kind of moralistic belief that this fiat currency, which enslaves and dominates us all, is basically actually worse off in your pocket supporting your fight against the New World Order than it is against somebody else who's freely offering it to you? We do that all the time. And it's freaking stupid. It's like, are you in it for the longevity? You know, and that's what I'm in this for. I'm not, you know, some Johnny Come Lately or weekend excursion truther camp. You know, this is my life now. I realize that all my friends are basically, if you're into this stuff, you can be friends with me. If you're not into this stuff, there's just no way that we're going to get close. You know, have you noticed that in your own life?
You're only 30. You sound like you're so much more older. You must be a very old soul.
No, it's because the vast majority of my friends are on average about twice my age, and they impart knowledge to me freely, and that's kind of what I hope to do.
Do you have any thoughts on reincarnation, Vinny?
I think that it's possible. I mean, there have been plenty of cases documented in India where children will be born in a village about 20 miles away from a massive city, and that child, once they grow up to be able to speak, they'll be telling people about this house that they were from and this family, and they'll know all the names of their family members, and they never met them. They never even traveled outside of their village before, and yet when they go and they visit, they know everything about them. They know the layout of the house and all of that kind of thing. So I think reincarnation does happen. I just don't think it happens for everybody, or at the very least, if it does happen, you don't remember, not everybody wakes up and remembers who they were. And in fact, I was thinking about this. What if you're a reincarnation of yourself? Okay, what if when you die, a baby gets born somewhere and it's got your consciousness in it? And that job that you now have is to catch up to where you were in your previous life and improve upon it. Sort of like a video game. If you don't achieve the objective and you get killed, you go to the respawn point and you go after the objective again. So, I don't know. What is the choice here? Is the choice between you die, go to hell, and you spend the rest of eternity in perpetual suffering, where you suffer and burn and choke and die repeatedly over and over again? Or do you come back to planet Earth in a new body, in a new shell, with no memory of your previous life, and then somehow have to fumble your way through the darkness in order to correct all your past mistakes and stop being some kind of a perpetual ethereal douchebag spirit? Or do you somehow achieve everything that you wanted to achieve in life, be a good cat, and wind up going to heaven? Now, I don't think the belief in any of those elements truly matters. And let me define that. Here's the reason why I think it doesn't matter whether or not you go to hell, heaven, or get reincarnated. Because you won't be able to tell beforehand, afterhand, Or during the process. Can you? I mean, name me one person who's gone to heaven and come back, or gone to hell and come back, or been reincarnated and been able to actually remember absolutely everything they did in their entire life and is capable of correcting any mistakes that they made and becoming a perfect human being, right? Which I think would probably be the ideal, is to achieve perfection. Now, my opinion is that there's two selves. There's yourself and your higher self. Now, let's say my impression of my higher self, he kind of looks like me, he kind of sounds like me, but he's a lot fitter than me, he's a lot stronger than me, he's a lot smarter, he's a lot more eloquent, a lot more creative. He's taken everything that is me and hyped it up to be something that I could never achieve in the mortal plane. And the reason why I believe that is because I like to have something to strive towards. If you don't have a higher self to strive towards, it means that you're basically sitting there in a lower base of your life, and you're not really going to achieve anything. And it helps to have something to achieve that you know that you never can, because you'll never lose your motivation for life if you assume that you can't actually achieve perfection. It means you'll always be happy with being given what you got. Now, I could be wrong on this.
And, yes, and, you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the thing about beliefs, is that there's no evidence for any belief.
So there's also a knowing. There's a level of knowing. Anyway, no, it's fun. It's such a long conversation, and it's almost the end of the show, so I don't want to try to, you know, put in too much. But please continue, Vinny.
Well, somebody put in a question about time-traveling assassins, and I was just like, I actually heard about this, interviewed Andrew Bashago a couple of times, and I can't recall specifically, but it was something like every time they tried to kill Hitler, they sent back teams and that kind of thing, a truck would, like, roll in the way, and they're like, that truck wasn't there before. Or like a stage would collapse or something, and it's like, that didn't collapse before. And it's almost like you can't alter history. And what that's kind of said to me is that whatever has happened has happened. And the lesson of history is that you have to learn from it, right? Basically. Yeah. And if you refuse to learn from history, you are doomed to repeat it, as the old saying goes. And it seems to me that history has become almost like a taboo topic to a degree. You take a look at what was it? I saw this article one time. American history teachers are a dying breed, right? They're the hardest kind of teacher to find, and it's very, very hard to find a good history teacher at that. And I think this is because the New World Order has a great deep knowledge of history, not just, you know, recent history, but also of ancient history and so on and so forth. I'd love to be able to go down into the Vatican vaults and find out all the books that they stole from the Library of Alexandria with all the ancient knowledge of the world and stuff like that. You know, that'd be pretty cool to actually have unfettered access. But the problem is knowledge really is power. And so if you want to disempower people so that they're easier to control, domesticate, and dominate, you need to separate them from knowledge. And this is the reason why I believe the youth culture evolves so quickly, is to keep them disinterested from anything their parents or their grandparents might have been into. And it's really quite motivational to see young kids that are into, say, Frank Sinatra, for example, or Nina Simone, or any of these much older now musicians who were really fantastic in their day, even though today we've got digital music and so on and so forth. If you can actually incorporate a little bit of the old with the new, it's almost like you're creating something better, in my opinion. And when we think about the past and we think about our elders, it seems to me that there is an immense amount of knowledge that we have not lived through, that we cannot remember because we weren't freaking there, that we can accumulate. And elders are always, or at least in my experience, been willing to speak about these things that they have seen, the lessons that they've had, and these wonderful lives that they've lived. And if you are only surrounded, like in high school, for example, with kids of your own age who can't teach you anything because they don't know anything about life any better than you do, you're going to be detached from knowledge. And once you're detached from knowledge, again, easy to manipulate, control, and dominate. And you're never going to live the life that you wish to live.
Can't deny that as a fact.
And you know, how we treat our elders nowadays is, it's kind of sickening to me. Like when my grandfather, got sick after Nana died, my uncle and auntie, they built a flat, for him on their property so that they could talk to him every day, so that they could be close with him every day, so that they could basically benefit from his company and his knowledge, every day. What happens normally, however, is we get sick of them being sick all the time and needing all this attention and all of this help because they're no longer as physically capable or as mentally astute as they once were, and we shove them in a home with a whole bunch of people like them. And it's not entirely dissimilar from how you shove kids in school together. They don't really have a whole lot to learn from each other, you know? I mean, I thought that the strength of, say, Maori, and this was the reason why I was thinking about it the other day, was that they used to have that extended family culture whereby the elders were central to the community. There was always councils. There was always talking, and there was always laughter. And the laughter part of it, it's only really hit me in the last day or so, just how important that is for healing, for getting along. Because I spent the weekend with my family, and what I found was, like, my family is all like me to a degree. Like, we're all basically genius and really, really good at whatever we do. Like, my sister's like a tech geek and an incredible salesperson. My brother's like a top of his field chiropractor. My sister Cherie, she managed some of the biggest and best hotels in the city where she lives. My sister Marcia has so many ribbons from horse events that they're basically kind of like a big thick army coat on a coat hanger. You know, we're talking about a family of really, really high performing people, and that comes out of the parents that we've had. And I was thinking, how can I actually get along with somebody who's sort of they're not the same as me. We're all radically different people. But how do I get along with them if I know for a fact that I'm actually in no way superior to them? And it's like a very different dynamic to talk radio where you've got to kind of talk and fill up dead air as it was talking with my family, because it seemed that we all had a story to tell. We all had little elements and things like that. And we were all sitting there waiting for our turns to speak. But what was great is that we were all telling funny stories. We were all having a good time. Whereas previously I sort of like felt afraid or concerned that my family don't approve of what I do or listen to me when I speak, you know, cause I'm the youngest. I'm the youngest of five. And when you've got that sort of pin on you as the youngest, they kind of like, they expect you to fail. They expect you to fall. And you sort of change your body language without you even knowing it. My mate Jono pointed this out to me the other day after I came home from the weekend. And what was interesting is that the roles that other people put you in, you start to fulfill those roles. You ever notice that?
No.
Yes, you know, yes, you know, yes, 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 I do, totally. They are your... I'm sorry, go ahead, Mona.
I said it might be a male thing. Go ahead. I'm teasing.
Yes, I am your family of five. I'm from a family of four children, and two boys and two girls. And, I can... see all the programming that's gone from our parents to our who we are and try to deprogram that as much as I could, and it takes time, but it's very rewarding, because when you get to a little bit closer to who you really are, you start to be able to do the things you want to do.
Well, I think it really catalyzed for me when I came home on a trip with my sister. She explained to me that, she doesn't like me saying things, right? And in the strictest sense, she doesn't like me, saying something, that she doesn't know or that I can't prove. So I'm not allowed to just sit there and rattle off stuff off the top of my head without any evidence. In fact, I'm not allowed to sit there and just ramble off stuff regardless. And so she asked me, you know, okay, I'm giving you free rein now. And one of my points, my conversation with her is I don't know my brother. I don't know my sisters as people, because I actually haven't had the chance to just sit down as an adult and talk to them as you do, without that kind of angst, without those kind of like two fists smashing together sort of thing in a kind of competitive sibling rivalry. And so I realized something. I got a talent for two things in talk radio. One is talking and the other is listening and asking the right questions. Yeah. And so that's what we did for about the last hour of the trip. I just kept asking her questions and listening to the answers. And by the end of that trip, she not only knew a lot about my skills as an interviewer, but I actually learned about her personality, where it comes from, why things are difficult for her to deal with, that kind of thing. And I think it's when you have the ability to just switch off yourself and you go, okay, this isn't about me. This isn't about my ego. I want to get to know my sibling. Like, I really do. I want to respect them. I want to care about them. I want to listen to them. And I want to understand them. For the first time in my life, I was able to do that because I let go of the little brother complex. I let go of I need to prove myself to my siblings. I didn't
you wouldn't
have to feel
even
like
believe- You wouldn't even believe how much I can relate to that, but please continue.
Well, I think the point is, once you realize that you don't have to prove yourself to anybody, that's when people stop asking you to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see you all as a certain generation, because I'm quite older than I guess maybe most of you on this call, but it's good to hear that you have the direction and mobility to be able to make those changes and not fall into the darkness of the pit.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is we don't think about our relationships with other people as much as we should, because basically life has become a lot more self-centered. There's a lot less family around us permanently, you know. like, we don't live with three generations of our family in general anymore. We have our own homes. We have our own things that we're doing, and you get to see your family maybe on the holidays and what have you. And then when you try to explain to them what you're doing with your life and what you're doing in your living, they kind of switch off because you haven't asked about their life. You haven't asked what they're doing. And what's happened, I think, is that because we've been so separated from over generations of time, of course, so separated from our elders and the youngins, you know, the little kids and things like that. I got to play with my sister's children and my brother's children, and we had a great time, laughing the whole time, wrestling around, having good fun. And it was just me versus four children, and while all their parents and everybody else kind of took a break and just laughed at how difficult it was for me to do it.
And probably thanked you for occupying their attention so they didn't have to.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, is like people, like for example, with the advent of feminism, the difficulty became that a lot of women now don't have kids. Like a huge proportion of the 40-something women in our world today who are professionals and things of that nature don't currently have children and will never have children. And I think this stretches across to the males as well, that because we don't want an inconvenience in our life, right? And that's kind of what it came down to in terms of talking to people about the reasons why they don't want children, is that it seems that they want independence and freedom and no responsibility till the end of time. And part of the way to achieve that is to never take responsibility for another life other than your own by bringing one into this world.
I think it's more economic, is my view on that. But I agree with you, Vinny.
Yeah.
I think society has wanted, or the cabal, or the big guys, whoever they are, has wanted to separate the families, and that if you can be together with yours, give great honor, because I don't think we've had any teachings or right ways to actually be able to incorporate a family as a unit. Not like it used to be.
Well, the family unit's been under attack for decades and decades and decades. Like, you have a look at, say, for example, the 1930s Depression. When the economy downturned, everybody was actually living with their families. There was no social welfare or anything like that. You couldn't rely on the state to save you. So it was basically families living together through hard times, supporting each other, feeding each other, and helping each other survive. And nowadays, you can imagine what an economic downturn would be like. You got millions of people dead in a month, right? And it's part of the Communist Manifesto to destroy the family unit, because if you don't have loyalty first to your family and your loyalty is instead first to the state, then you see the state as your parents, you see the state as your family, and you'll actually show loyalty to them first and not your own blood. And you will turn in your own family members that have firearms if the government tells you to. You will put on a black uniform and you will go and execute children in the street if your government tells you to, because they're your family and you have to stand by them.
Mm-hmm. Vinny, do you mind if I plug my show real quick?
Sure.
So Ground Control tomorrow night, we got Stuart Swerdlow on, who I know you've interviewed many times.
Yeah, I love Stuart. He was actually the reason why I have my big 27-inch Mac right in front of me. The first time I think it was like the first time a listener was listening into my show, it was with Stuart, and he was a big fan of Stuart. And Stuart said, well, somebody needs to get you a new Mac, Vinny. And he did. It was this guy just lives just down the road from me and never heard my show before. Didn't even listen to the whole broadcast. Only listened to the first 15 minutes and bought me a brand new $4,000 Mac on his company's dime, his company that he owns, by the way. So, you know, it's one of those things that I'm always going to be grateful to Stuart and my listeners and my contributors for basically till the end of time, because it's necessary to appreciate what people do for you when they can, you know? You can't expect the world, but...
And, Vinny, you're welcome to join in the second hour when I open the phone lines, if you'd like.
Righty, huh?
As are you, Sean and Mona.
Oh,
everybody,
thank you.
We open the phones in the second hour.
I might not be there for the second hour. I've got a big, my brother's big anniversary tonight. So I'm gonna go out and have fun with him and drink all my dad's old liquor stash that we got from the beach house over the weekend. And yeah, it's gonna be good. We're gonna pour a drink for the old man on the grass. Maybe kill a few of the blades of it. You know, it'll be fantastic.
No worries, we got a full show. I just wanted to be sure you know you're invited.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much for that offer. And also, I just wanted to make an appeal for donations for myself as well. The website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And the reason I'm asking for donations is because my wife's van is leaking oil like a son of a wench. It actually cost her like $14 worth of oil that we had to pour into the engine just so she could go and do two-hour gardening jobs and then get home before all the oil ran out. Like, it's a massive leak. Like, it's like the Gulf of Mexico attached to a car, bro. It's out of freaking control. It is the deep diesel engine horizon, and we desperately need some help to get that puppy fixed. It's going to cost like $3,500. We've currently saved up over $1,000. When we sell the van, we can get about maybe $500 for it, just for parts. So we probably need another $2,500 or so, either to fix this van or buy something that's comparable to my wife's purposes. And if you think that, I don't want to support Vinny's wife, I just want to support Vinny. Well, bro, guess who paid for the majority of my rent and bills and food and things of that nature? Well, I was a broke-ass activist trying to fight scumbaggery on the skin of my teeth, on the smell of a hint of a whiff of an oily rag. My wife! So, and the thing is, we've gotten into this situation now where we're like, you know what? I don't even remember how much money I've given her or how much money she's given me. I can't even thank the listeners enough for allowing me to just basically live so I can keep doing my very important work. It's just that it's really difficult sharing a vehicle when one person needs to use it to do their work. And the other person needs it for running missions and going around and interviewing people and attending protests and things of that nature. So if you can please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a donation today or start up an automatic payment either into the Kiwi Bank account if you happen to be a New Zealander or into the PayPal if you happen to have a credit card. So give us some of your slave fiat money and we will help to fight the slavery and scumbaggery and fiat currency system on your behalf. Thank you very much. I feel great. I actually have had quite a fantastic rant today, you know. Maybe you can tell, but I'm feeling a little bit more uplifted, like
an economy. You kicked A, Vinny. You kicked A. Oh, that first hour especially was amazing.
And unfortunately, in fact, let me correct myself, until of the Hun, fortunately, we now have to go to break. And, baby, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. My slaves of the global plantation, the Vinnie Eastwood Show will return next week at 10 p.m. on Wednesday on freedomslips.com. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your donations. And thanks for just being you. We'll see you again sometime. Revolution Radio.